This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Issues that you very rarely hear about these days is breastfeeding. You remember a time, I think really it was in the 80s and 90s, that there was always a big debate, I guess, as it became more prevalent for women to be in the workplace and mothers specifically in the workplace, these issues started cropping up. But I haven't really heard anything about breastfeeding, at least nothing substantial, for years now, in terms of whether, when and where mothers should be able to breastfeed. Well, very interesting. There's a big story all over the place. I just read it in the New York Post that comedian Arj Barker, who I confess I am not familiar with, kicked out a breastfeeding mother and her newborn baby from his show in Australia on Saturday night and forced a handful of furious attendees to walk out of the theater in solidarity. And the comedian clashed with the mother at the theater in Australia, and there was a seven-month-old baby that was apparently making gurgling sounds, as seven-month-olds do. And one person, Trish Ferranda, told the folks that basically I was sitting there and she gurgled a bit, the equivalent of if someone was coughing. And apparently the comedian stopped and acknowledged the baby before he cracked a few jokes about the situation. And at the end of the skit of a little baby in the room, basically he said, "Take me outside." Well, here's somebody that was at this show recounting these events. Listen to this.
"I didn't actually buy the tickets. We ended up having tickets in the four rows back from the front of the stage. Fortunately, they were towards the side, so I thought I could make a quick exit if the baby got rowdy, which it doesn't generally get rowdy. If she's with me and she's fed, she's a generally happy baby. But I thought, I've got a plan, an escape plan. I don't want to impact on anyone else."
By the way, I didn't realize this. This is actually the mother of the baby that was thrown out, speaking to 3AW Melbourne.
"And an escape plan. I don't want to impact on anyone else and their enjoyment of the show. So I sort of thought about that in my head before we went in. And so he was sitting there and she gurgled a little bit. It was probably the equivalent to if someone was coughing. And he sort of stopped and said, 'Oh, there's a baby.' And then at the end of this little skit he did about, oh, you know, there's a baby in the room, he sort of said, 'Oh, I speak baby.' And she said, 'Take me outside.' And at that point I was like, oh, I don't really think he was joking about that." And then a bit later on, he started again. Sorry, my four-year-old is speaking off now. So he started again and he came and stood right. She made a little noise. He came and stood right in front of me. And the noise was, people weren't turning their heads to look at us. She wasn't screaming. She was just being a baby. She gurgled a little bit. She had a bit of a whinge, nothing super loud. And I was actually breastfeeding while he came and stood in front of me. And then he was basically telling me to leave. People were laughing. So I was like, I don't think he's joking, but everyone else seems to think he's joking. So I said to him, "Oh, do you actually want me to leave?" And he didn't hear me. So he said, "What?" And I said, "Do you actually want me to leave?" I had to sort of yell out, "Do you actually want me to leave?" And he said, "Yes."
So she asked, "Do you really want me to leave?" And he says, "Yes, I do." A couple of things strike me about this. One, why are you bringing a seven-month-old baby to a comedy show? I know it's difficult to get a babysitter, believe me, but and I don't know what this woman's childcare situation is. I don't know what the baby's situation is. Maybe she needs constant attention from her mother. I would just think of all the places to bring a 7-month-old, a comedy show is not one of them. Two is the comedian. I understand making a joke about it because that's what comedians do. But if he seriously asked her to leave as the mom depicts it here, I think that's inappropriate. So when she left, a group of 10 or 12 people, including one man, they walked out as well. And they said they were walking out in protest of the humiliated mother's departure. A woman's family member, actually this woman who you just heard, her family member claimed on Twitter that the comedian, Mr. Barker, said the pair were ruining his train of thought, meaning the baby gurgling and breastfeeding was ruining his train of thought. Thanks to the countless women and one grandfather who left in protest, atrocious. You're in City of Melbourne at an international comedy festival. Have an ounce of respect. A woman has purchased a ticket for a night out with her sister and friend to laugh and enjoy herself, and you badger her and encourage her to leave and get a refund. So I don't think I would have brought a 7-month-old to a show like this, but there's now a big division in the internet community over theater etiquette. I certainly don't think this comedian should have asked her to go. So I kind of agree with both of them. I think, look, the show is generally something that is supposed to be for people over the age of 15. I think it's even stated on the ticket. And she had an infant with her. And the comedian put out a statement saying the baby was disrupting my performance. And he put out a statement saying, on behalf of the other 700 people who paid to see the gig, I politely told her the baby couldn't stay. She thought I was kidding, which made the exchange, sorry, I lost my place in this article. But basically, initially, she thought he was kidding, and then he wasn't. He said she thought I was kidding, which made the exchange a bit awkward. I felt bad about the whole situation and stated this on the night more than once. I offered her a refund. Theater staff should not have seated a baby in my audience in the first place. I see what he's saying there. I wouldn't have made fun of a breastfeeding new mom, but why are you bringing a 7-month-old to a comedy show? What do you think? Is he right? Is she right? I actually think they're both right and they're both wrong. I think she was wrong to bring the baby. I think he was wrong to throw her out. 800-848-9222. So far, this is something that is tending to divide the world along gender lines. Most of the moms, including some politicians, are siding with the breastfeeding mom. Australian politician Ellen Sandel said, "I am livid at hearing this. It's hard enough for new mums to participate in society with all the barriers put in front of them. To be humiliated like this for just trying to enjoy the comedy festival is awful." But a lot of critics are also agreeing with the comedian, Mr. Barker, faulting this mom for bringing a 7-month-old to a comedy show. No, I think this is one of those things where they're both right and they're both wrong. Let me know what you think. 800-848-9222. Tony, where are you on this? There's nothing nothing cousin related here, which I know is usually what gets you going.
Well, here you calling me out again. I'm not again. It's not my cup of tea.
Well, what?
You know, I'm just, hold on, I got to blow my nose.
Okay, well, we've caught Tony full nasaled, full nostriled, and he needs a moment. So bear with him, and we'll hear his take on this. Matt Blaze, where are you on this? Are you with the mom? You with the comedian? You with me, kind of in between?
There is no reason to bring a baby to a comedy show.
So you're with the comedian, bottom line.
Yeah, there's no reason. Why would you do that? What is the point? It's almost like, when I see these people that go into supermarkets and every store or the mall and they bring their dog with them as an accessory, it's basically saying, hey, look at me and my dog. It's the same when you bring a baby to a comedy show and going, hey, look at me. I have a baby and I'm going to draw all the attention to me. And my baby at some point is probably going to cry or yell out or say something because they shouldn't be here at a comedy show. It makes no sense.
Yeah. And now that you have clear nasal passages, Tony.
That's, you know, why would you bring a baby to a comedy show? It's for adults only.
Yeah. It's
like bringing a baby to a movie theater and the baby starts to cry. Like, shut up.
Right. And that's, I'm trying to see it from her perspective. But what I don't understand is why you wouldn't just pump some milk for the baby before you go. And if you needed, you know, if you needed a night out, I understand that. There's got to be a way to hire a babysitter for 2 hours, 3 hours.
There's a cousin or God's daughter that needs some extra cash. Okay, but do not bring a baby to a comedy club.
So if this was not just a comedy club, this is a big theater of 800 plus people. And so, look, I wouldn't have handled it the way this comedian handled this, by kind of publicly mocking her and throwing her out, essentially. But I think she, if I'm, you know, like cops used to do, or insurance adjusters used to do when they're assigning blame in a traffic accident, I'm saying this is 60% her fault, 40% his. That's kind of where I'm going in the blame assignment on this one. Let me know what you think. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. This comedian, Arj Barker, kicking this breastfeeding mother and her baby out of his Australia show. The comedian is saying, look, it says right there on the ticket, you have to be 15 years old and older. I don't know why they bothered seating a 7-month-old child to begin with. A lot of other folks are saying that this was terrible, that you should not do this to a mom. One person on Twitter said, I'm a parent, and I think he was right to ask her to leave after she failed to consider the other paying audience members. Most comedy shows are not much more than an hour. Organize a babysitter or don't go. That's basically what Tony's saying. And I understand that. Now, once she makes that, what I'll call a mistake, should she have been mocked and thrown out? I don't think so. How bad could the 7-month-old have been gurgling that she was really disturbing not only other audience members, but the comedian? I have to think it was minimal. Now, if the baby is screaming, if the baby is shouting, if the baby is carrying on and genuinely creating a disturbance, which is not what we're hearing at this point, then I think it's certainly fine to ask the mom to, would you mind having the baby step outside until the baby calms down, and then come back in if you want. What do you think? 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Diane in Brooklyn. Hello, Diane.
Hey. Well, I can only speak from experience. And when you have a really young child, I know with me, I didn't really trust anybody else to watch that child. So, you know, if I really, really wanted to go somewhere, I'd have to take the child. Although, if the child started to really put up a fuss and make a lot of noise and disturb, I would have left on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand. I mean, it's so, you know, you're like basically locked in the house.
No, I understand it too, which is one of the reasons, if it was my wife, I would insist that we got a babysitter, because sometimes I think you need a little bit of a break, you know, from a 7-month-old.
With a young, young baby, you know, things have happened. You know, babies have been abused, or not even abused. I mean, they, you know, it's hard to trust someone with a very small baby. It's very, very difficult for some people. And I know for me it was. So I would have gone, but if the baby started to fuss a lot, I would have left on my own.
All right, so, and your phone's a little wacky here, Diane, so I'm going to let you go in a second, but just your closing thought is that the comedian was absolutely wrong here.
Well, he made her feel really bad. On the other hand, if the baby was acting up, she should have just taken it upon herself to leave. You know, otherwise, you know, you can't go anywhere and do anything, and it can get really, it would just get horrible, you know, because you're really outside of society.
Right, right.
You know? But I would have taken it upon myself to leave.
Yeah, no, that's what I've done. When I've had my son in certain places and he's been carrying on. Diane, thank you. 800-848-9222. Larry, what say you?
How are you, Frank? I say no ifs, ands, or buts about it. She was totally out of line. It was very inappropriate for her to bring the baby there. It was inappropriate for a baby to be allowed in. And, you know, anytime you take a position other than that, you're against motherhood and babies. So, and I got to take issue with you about this 60-40 thing.
Okay.
That's not how you really feel. You feel no. It was 90%. She was 90% wrong. He was 10%.
I don't, Larry. You know, so when I first saw the headline, honestly, my gut reaction, my instinctual reaction is, what a jerk this guy is. But, you know, nursing moms have such a hard time.
Hang on, let me just finish my comment, Larry.
I thought, what a jerk this guy is. You know, nursing moms have such a hard time. Does she really need to be humiliated in public like this? And then I tried to put myself and my wife in the shoes of this nursing mom. And I thought to myself, there's absolutely no scenario in which we would have ever brought our child to a show of any sort, a movie or a live show, a play, a concert, when he was only 7 months old. So I.
Well, yes, because you have common sense. This woman has none. And the guy earlier, it was spot on with saying she wanted attention. Okay. And now it becomes a whole baby mother routine. She was totally out of line bringing that baby in. And when the baby started fussing, she should have, like the woman said earlier, remove him. There's an old expression that if you don't want it to be something, don't start something.
Larry,
that comic wouldn't have said a word if she wasn't there.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously not, right? But he did. So I hear you, Larry. Maybe, am I being too kind to her by giving her only 60% blame? I don't think so. I don't think you do that. I think you got to give a nursing mom a lot of leeway. That being said, the baby shouldn't have been there. Should not have brought the baby, period. But I don't know. Do you really need to throw her out and humiliate her in such a public manner? I don't think you do. I don't think you do. You know, you're such an emotional basket case as a new parent, but especially as a new mom. I feel like I know all of society tries to cater to you to some extent, but there's a reason for that. I feel like they're entitled to a little bit of special consideration. That being said, I think it's irresponsible to bring a 7-month-old. So I know people hate when I will equivocate like this, but I really do see both sides. I would never bring this child to a comedy show, but the comedian shouldn't have thrown around. That's my view. Paulie in Westwood, what do you think?
Definitely. The woman was just looking for attention. All the above, everybody was right. She could have went out to the lobby. She could have pumped, you know, into a bottle. That woman is just looking for attention. There's no reason for that. And Frank, one more thing. If Dominic's looking for dough, all he's got to do is cut an English muffin in half, put sauce on it, put some cheese on it, put a little oregano, he's got pizza.
Yeah, fair enough, Paulie. Thank you. Appreciate that. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road. searching in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire. I can hear you through the
great
wire.
Glenn Campbell singing Wichita Lineman. Today would have been Glenn Campbell's birthday. Unfortunately, no longer with us. A really incredible artist and an incredible singer who was really one of the first country singers to jump through, to break through as a pop star, and had a very sad ending to his life, as I think everybody who has battled with Alzheimer's does. I talked about this 10 years ago, but about 9 or 10 years ago, I saw this terrific documentary they made about his life and specifically his battle with Alzheimer's. And it was very moving and very informative. If you want to check it out, I'm sure it's available on a whole bunch of different streaming services. It's called Glenn Campbell, I'll Be Me. It's a wonderful documentary. And one of the songs that he sings in that documentary, which he actually performed while very much in the throes of Alzheimer's disease, was actually nominated for an Academy Award that year for Best Original Song. So I do recommend that. I know that movie itself was somewhat controversial because I think there was some conflict between Glenn Campbell's widow and his children over whether or not the events depicted in that film should have been depicted. And I understand that as from a spouse's perspective and from a child's perspective. But as a viewer and not necessarily a party to the situation, I found the documentary really informative and really moving. So happy birthday, Glenn Campbell. And that documentary is called I'll Be Me. All right. 800-848-9222. If you want to comment on anything we're talking about, I was in Atlantic City for the first time over the weekend, maybe the first time this year over the weekend, because it was my friend Jeffrey Goldstein's bachelor party. We had a great time, really a terrific time. We were there two nights. We were able to squeeze a lot in to two nights, but I feel like whenever I go, I'm never able to get everything that I want to get in, but it was fun. And there were six of us in total, and there, we had two great meals at a couple of great restaurants that have been out around over 100 years. And, you know, this was a group that is very into sharing meals, right? And they're trying to plot the meal sharing and plan the orders with sharing in mind. Now, I am not a meal sharer. Now, if you want to share an appetizer course that is meant to be shared, like a seafood tower or some, you know, fried galamad, or if we get a big salad and we all get a scoop of the salad. But as far as sharing entrees goes, not for me, not for me. So we're at Chef Vola's on Friday. Great place, you know, one of the best restaurants ever. And these guys are all cutting up their steak. Now, I'm not really a red meat eater, so I don't really want their steak. I want what I ordered, the Chilean sea bass. What they did to this, I don't understand. I mean, there was lemon on it. There was some honey. It was sweet. It was hot. It was amazing. And it's, you know, it's pretty thin. These guys are chopping up and dividing these monstrous steaks. And so I just want to preserve my little Chilean sea bass. But I don't want to be a jerk because these guys are all dividing and they're very generous with dividing their portions. But I've got my little tiny piece of fish. And I said, all right, you know, Jeffrey, do you want some? Sure, I'll take some. So I caught him a small piece. Okay. Brian, do you want some? Brian is his brother and his best man who organized this whole thing. Did a remarkable job. He had a Google Doc and a printed itinerary, a printed schedule. When we were going out there, my mom and my wife and everybody was saying, oh, be careful. Don't get too wild. I don't think they were prepared for the level of organization and adultness. And when I say adultness, I mean acting kind of like a librarian, not a general manager of a gentleman's club. They were not prepared for the level of adultness that was on this trip. So I cut Brian a piece of my fish, and I'm sitting there with my little Chilean sea bass, and everybody's devouring all these big meals. Oh, no, they weren't eating steak. They were eating veal parm, which I didn't want to rain on anybody's parade, but I've never really been comfortable eating veal because of what they do to the baby cows and everything. So I've never been a veal person. But they're loving it. And I'm not going to obviously be a Debbie Downer and say, oh, no, you know, I don't want to share your veal, so you can't have any of my fish. So they're, you know, as is the case with a lot of great restaurants, we're getting appetizers that are being shared, which is fine. They're eating all this stuff. And Jeffrey, who has a piece of my fish in front of him, is stuffed, can't eat anything. So I take back my fish that is sitting unmolested on his plate because he's too full. No, I still want that fish. So I took it back, and I was glad I did. And no one seemed to notice. So that was night one. The next night, I was very clear. I said, guys, you do what you want in terms of sharing. I am happy to go along with sharing an appetizer, but I am getting the lobster thermidor. Boom, that's it. Not sharing it with anyone. I even told the waiter, do not let anybody else have this. It's just for me. And it worked out much better when that gets out there. I'm not up for sharing. You know, it was an interesting trip, and it was a great trip, honestly. And I didn't lose, which was nice. I didn't play that much, but I finished a little bit ahead, which, you know, after expenses, you pretty much break even. And I discovered for the first time crapless craps. And apparently more and more casinos are offering this. Have you seen this anywhere? I've never seen it. Basically, I don't know how familiar you are with craps, but on the come out roll at a regular craps table, if you, let's say you're betting $15 or $25, if you bet $25 and you roll a 2, a 3, or a 12, you lose your bet. That's craps. You lose your bet, but not your turn. You keep rolling, but you lose your bet. And if you roll a 7 or an 11, you win back your money. If you roll anything else, that becomes the point or the mark. Well, with this crapless craps, they make it so that you don't lose your bet if you roll a 2, a 3, or a 12. Instead, those are numbers on the board. So if you roll a 2, a 3, or a 12, that becomes the point or the mark. So that was pretty cool. I was down a bit on Friday, and then I made a comeback, won all my money back with that crapless craps. So that was interesting. What was a little, and I probably shouldn't share this with you, but I will, because I share everything with you. So my friend Brian Goldstein organized this whole thing for his brother, Jeffrey. Brian is a very close friend who I've known since I was 14. Great. Not only a good friend, but a great brother, a very good husband, and by all accounts, a very good father to his two children, who are a little bit older than my son. So I get a room, right? And I request specifically two queen beds, one for me, one for Brian. They request two other rooms. They pay for two other rooms that are two queen beds each. So we get in there. And we say, if you can, try to keep them all on the same floor. If not, try and keep them close. So two are on the same floor and one is not. So we go into our room, and there's not two queen beds. There's one king size bed. So I call down. Now, I'm tired. Still haven't really slept or anything. I said, let me just call down. Maybe they can bring up a cot or something so that we don't have to sleep in the same bed like we're 10-year-olds. So I called down there and I explained to him that I booked a room with two beds and here I have just one. And they said, all right, well, if you go downstairs, they'll give you a new room. So I'm thinking, do I want to carry all of my luggage, all my stuff, all the way downstairs, then get a new room on another floor? Carry it all the way up there. I said, honestly, I don't really feel like bringing all my stuff down again. Can you just bring another bed up here? Sure, absolutely. We can bring a rolling bed up there right away. Great, thank you. That'll be $35. What? $35? You sold me a room with two queen beds. Why not just give me the rolling bed? And then they said, well, no, we're offering you a room with two beds. You just have to go downstairs and get the keys. So I didn't feel it was right to pay the $35. And I'm not cheap. I mean, you got to see the way I'm throwing around chips. I'm tipping dealers like crazy, playing crapless craps, tipping everybody. And I said, all right, fine. Don't give us the rolling bed. I don't want to pay the $35 out of spite. So we ended up sharing this king size bed, two full grown men sharing a king size bed. But honestly, the bed was so large that there was not much. There was no hanky panky, much to the chagrin of both of us. So that was that. I for the first time in many years, I shared a bed with another adult male, but it was completely G rated. I'll tell you what I didn't know. And I wish, and I hope Brian's not listening, because I know he does listen to this program from time to time. And I would have loved a warning about this. Yeah, we stay out pretty late both nights, and we get up pretty early both days, because we've got a lot to get going, a lot to do. Brian is a big snorer. He's snoring up a storm. And I would never have guessed it, because when you picture people that are snorers, and we've done whole segments on this, but there's this whole overlap between snoring and sleep apnea, and not everybody that has sleep apnea snores, not everybody that snores has sleep apnea, but there's a tremendous overlap. And most of the people that snore and have sleep apnea because of it, they're people that are at least a little bit overweight. Not a hard and fast rule, but Brian is very thin. He's very petite. And so I never would think, okay, maybe he's got sleep apnea or something, or it's people that are heavy drinkers. Brian will have a glass of wine, a beer, not a heavy drinker. I don't know that I've ever seen him drunk, honestly, as long as I've known him. So not being overweight and not being a heavy drinker, I didn't think that I would have to worry about the snoring. Let me tell you, this fella could snore to wake up the dead. Now, luckily, I can sleep with the best of them, and I was able to get to sleep, but honestly, this is pretty close to what it sounded like. So that was that. We visited the Island Water Park for the first time. We had a great time. I'd never been there, and it's really fun for both adults and for children, so that was great. And then we're about to leave, and Brian had all of us send him money to pay for dinner both nights, and to, you know, take care of his brother who's getting married, who's the bachelor, to take care of the rooms, and he had budgeted all the expenses. So Sunday morning, you know, I had to get back for a family dinner, and some other folks had different obligations on Sunday. So we ended up leaving without even getting breakfast or brunch or anything. And in part because we were all so full from dinner the night before. So Brian says to us, hey, we're under budget. So we actually have a surplus. So based on what all of you guys threw in, we're actually going to give everybody $100 back. Now, one of the fellas that's there, Jacob, he says, well, why don't we throw it on the blackjack table or on roulette and see if we can really make a bet? Now, that idea did not go over well with Brian. Brian is very by the book, very straight-laced, you know, works for Consumer Reports, very, very, honest and straightforward. Not at all the wild and crazy type. And so Brian throws some cold water on this. He says, no. Let me just give everybody their money back. Let me tell you something. If I was the person that was holding the money instead of Brian and we had $600 extra, there would never have even been a discussion about what was being done with that. I would have just said, all right, let's go place a bet with this. What game do you want to play it on? Absolutely would have been a bet. But now, you know, it worked out to my benefit, I guess, because I'm $100 richer. But we all could have been much richer. Who knows? So that was the incredible true story of this bachelor party weekend. There you have it. All right. 800-848-9222. One bed, snoring, sharing of meals and so forth. There you have it. And Jeffrey seemed really appreciative that everybody took the time to go out and attend, which was certainly nice. 800-848-9222. Igor is in New Jersey. Hi, Igor.
Greetings, Frank. You know, I'm surprised you're as sharp as you are today, given you probably barely slept this weekend.
Well, I'll be honest. This is where having Brian as a roommate, it really keeps me on the straight and narrow, because it's almost like when, you know, he's the good angel on one shoulder. So when he's going up and going to his bed, it's like, all right, and he didn't put pressure on me. He didn't say, do you want to come up, or he would just, I felt an obligation to not be reckless, which, you know, which again, when you're gambling, works out to your benefit, because if I was there by myself, I would have, you know, taken when I was ahead and just kept playing and then probably gone much deeper into the hole. But I didn't do that with Brian there because he's a stabilizing influence.
So it sounds like he played the role of your wife in more than one way.
I almost said that, Igor, but you did, so I don't have to.
Oh, very good. Hey, so Frank, wanted to comment about the woman who brought the baby to the comedy mm-hmm. show. Obviously, irresponsible, should not have brought the child. But, you know, about the comedian, did he think he was working in a library? I mean, you would think with hecklers and crowd noise, are you surprised he would be thrown off his game by a gurgling baby?
I am. And that's why I think he was a little out of line, because when you're a comedian, you're used to performing not only in front of hecklers, but people that are talking, people that are drunk, people that are obnoxious, people that are loud. Does a 7-month-old gurgling as they breastfeed really cause you to deviate from your stand-up act? I can't imagine that it would. So, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, was this supposed to be a monastery where nobody's allowed to, you know, utter a syllable? That's a good point.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that Matt and the bunch back there have said more things into your ear while you were doing a show than this little baby gurgled in front of this comedian.
Well, I have to be honest with you. A lot of times I do find that pretty distracting as well. So I there are days when I want to throw these people putting in my ear, you know, throw them out of here. You know, one time we had a fella, he doesn't work here anymore, but he only worked on the show a couple of times. Nice enough guy. But I mentioned Ric Flair, and now Ric Flair's signature sound is him very ebulliently yelling, "Woo!" And I don't think he originated that. I think that's from, I think he actually got that from Jerry Lee Lewis doing Great Balls of Fire and other things. He stole that from Jerry Lee Lewis by his own admission. But that's his thing, Ric Flair saying, "Woo!" So, and loudly, much more loudly than I just did. So I mentioned Ric Flair on the radio one night, and this fella, not even on the air, just in my ear, shouts loudly and very high-pitched, "Woo!" But
woo!
Much louder than that.
Woo!
And I'm thinking, you know, like, what are you doing? First of all, you don't even work on this show regularly. And, you know, I'm trying to think of something remotely coherent to say. It's not at all helped by you screaming "woo" in my ear. Now, on the rare occasion that Matt or Tony will say something in my ear, at least it's something that's relevant to the show and the production of the show. But that "woo" from that gentleman was, I must tell you, quite a distraction.
Woo!
Was it as bad? But at least that was on the air, right? That was on the air. That was not simple. That was for entertainment effect. It was not just for his own amusement.
Yeah, I never talk in your ear. Very, very
rarely. I said very rarely. Sometimes I wish you'd talk a little more. I'm getting messages. Oh, you know, you've been off the air for an hour. Or, you know, so-and-so, nobody can hear. Oh, Matt, it would have been nice to know that. But, yeah, no, I would not say that that a 7-month-old breastfeeding would be more distracting. Gary is in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Hi, Gary.
Hey, I got a couple questions about gambling on the craps.
Okay.
Are you an avid casino gambler yourself?
I mean, I don't have the money to be an avid casino gambler. I would characterize myself as an experienced casino gambler.
Okay. My question is, at 60 years old, is if you ever go to a casino, have you ever witnessed, is there a limit on Red and Black and Odd and Even, where everybody's betting $1, $5, this, that, and then all of a sudden a guy puts $10,000 down. Can he do that?
No, most tables do have a limit, but usually it's a several thousand dollar limit.
Okay, and if somebody does that, in your opinion, I mean, don't you think they're going to set the wheel to make sure that person doesn't win?
Well, honestly, I would worry about that on a cruise ship, because in a cruise ship, on a cruise ship, when they're out in international waters, anything goes. I think, and I've played in casinos on cruise ships, and I think there's ample opportunity for fixing everything. In places like Las Vegas or Atlantic City, I can't speak to the other places, but those are the places that I have had the most experience playing in casinos. The casinos are so heavily regulated by the state and by things like the Casino Commission that I think it would be very difficult for them to get away with that.
Very good. One more on casino and one more on wrestling, because I'm a wicked wrestling nut from way back.
Yeah.
When I see younger guys, I haven't been to a casino in 10 years, but when I used to see younger guys, white, black, or Spanish, they're in their 20s and they're betting $5 on 10 different numbers at 35 to 1 on the roulette wheel, right? And they're doing it like crazy. I never heard of such a thing, and they're doing it for a couple hours in a row, and they're going to casinos with thousands of dollars. Now, I'm not trying to say that they're drug dealers. I'm trying to say I never did that in my life. Did you?
No, but I've had friends that have done that. Thousands of dollars, maybe not, but certainly maybe $1,000, and they spend an hour or 2 hours there. I think that the broader point that you make, though, of using a casino to launder money, that's not at all far-fetched. We have seen example after example of not just drug dealers, but all sorts of other people that have cash businesses, both legal and illegal, using the casino process to launder that money. That does happen, Gary. Gary, thank you. You know, it's funny. One of the seasons of Ozark, that's a key plot point, is the role of a casino in a money laundering operation for drug dealers, actually. That's a great show, by the way. You know, one of the things that ended up being discussed this weekend was the 25 best dramas since The Sopranos, and some of them you know right away. Obviously, Breaking Bad has got to make the list. Obviously, Mad Men has got to make the list. I would put Ozark up there. Ozark, I think, is one of the best shows I've ever seen. All right, we'll continue with your calls in a moment. 800-848-9222, straight ahead.
Other Side of Midnight.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
In the USSR, this is actually, this date would have been not John Lennon's birthday, but Vladimir Lenin's birthday. This song sort of bridges the divide between John Lennon and Vladimir Lenin, obviously the first leader of the Soviet Union and sort of the grand poobah of the Russian Revolution. Hey, do you have any idea how much money in change Americans throw away each year? When I say throw away, I mean discard, throw into the trash. This is going to blow your mind. America, I'm just going to tell you, so don't bother guessing. Americans throw away up to $68 million in coins a year. And so much change ends up in the trash that you now, the Wall Street Journal did a whole article about this, that one company is now digging them up for a profit. So there's this Wall Street Journal article chronicles adventures at this waste management facility in Pennsylvania where workers load incinerated trash into industrial machinery that separates and sorts metals that and then sends them to get hosed down. And the reward is buckets of quarters, dimes, nickels and pennies. We are throwing away $68 million worth of change each year. And the sustainable waste processing company, ReWorld, is on a treasure hunt to find it. The company says that in the 7 years since it started the effort, it has collected at least $10 million worth of coins. $10 million. Now, that's incredible. Coins are as good as junk for many Americans. You have buses, laundromats, toll booths, parking meters. They now take credit and debit cards and mobile payments, and using any form of physical currency for a lot of people has become more of an annoyance. But change is often more trouble than it's worth to carry around. The U.S. quarter had roughly the buying power in 1980 that a dollar has today. So if you were carrying around a dollar today, that would essentially be a quarter in 1980. So if you lost a $100 bill, you'd look for it. If you lost a $20 bill, you'd look for it. If you lost a book, you'd look for it. That's what Robert Wapples, an economics professor at Wake Forest University, said. But a penny, you're just not going to look for it. And that's why he, and I do not agree with this, has encouraged the government to kill the penny, which costs about three times its value to make. The U.S. Mint spends $707 million making coins last year. Canada, New Zealand, and Australia have removed their one-cent pieces from circulation. Because coins can be hard to spend, they circulate slowly through the economy, or they don't circulate at all. More than half the coins in the U.S. are sitting in people's homes, according to the Federal Reserve. Do you know that? More than half of the coins in this country are sitting in people's homes. Well, I'd rather have them in people's homes than in the trash. Many coins are getting left behind. Airport checkpoints. The TSA collects hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of coins each year. I can understand why, because, you know, they make you take off your jacket and maybe, look, I just took off my jacket before. I had three pennies in there. I'm not throwing them away. I'm going to keep them. I'll use them to buy some gasoline later. And you have these coins that are left in couches, cars, and then they're sucked into vacuums. And then when you empty the vacuum into the garbage, it's sent to a landfill. And here you have this company that is making a mint in collecting these coins. You know what I could go for if, you know, because I recognize it costs more to make a penny than 1 cent. Let's make the penny 2 cents. That would seem to obviate a little bit of the loss in terms of revenue. Why not? Make it 2 cents. Right? But I don't think we should do away with it entirely. Andy Rooney, he was always with that. Doing away with the penny, doing away with the penny. No, I like the penny. Out of the roughly $10 million worth of coins that ReWorld has recovered, about $4 million of them, worth of them, are too damaged to use, which is a real shame. Check your coins. Check your coins. Pete, what's on your mind?
Hey, Frank, you know, you had me laughing when you said about sharing the rooms. We went down to a bachelor party, and what happened was one of the guys that was in the room, we had the same situation, so I ordered the bed. I was at the Borgata, $35, and he had the bed. And he comes in with this big, big suitcase, and he's got a sleep apnea machine.
Oh, boy.
He put that on. I never knew what those things were until I hear this thing going. And I go, I wheeled his bed into the hallway. And then they came, they said, you can't do that.
That's like, very funny. That's very funny, Pete.
And I won some money.
I'm glad you won, Pete. I'm glad you won. Your influence counts. Use it.